All right, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. My name is Hector Linares. I'm a program manager with the Virtual Machine Manager team. And with me today is Vishal. He's a lead program principal program manager working out of IDC, primarily working on DPM backup scenarios. So the session today is called The Big One, Protection and Recovery Using Windows Server 2012 and System Center SP1. I do want to give an update to the title. If you've seen this session before, it did include disaster recovery. That third part of the session has been removed. If you are part of the TAP program, then we'll give you more information. But at this point in time, we won't talk about fully automated disaster recovery with failover, failback capabilities. So we will talk about protection capabilities and high availability in Windows Server 2012. We will talk about backup, DPM, backup to the cloud, backup in your infrastructure on site. We will have all those demos and content. We just won't be talking about fully orchestrated DR. Okay. So to set the stage for the two parts of the discussion today, one half is focused primarily on Virtual Machine Manager and its interaction with Windows Server 2012 and the capabilities around failover clustering. The second part of the discussion goes into DPM, Data Protection Manager. It's another component of the System Center family, and that is a backup on-site, backup to the cloud. These are new capabilities coming in the Service Pack 1 timeframe, and that is set up to line up with Windows Server 2012. So for those that are familiar with VMM and have been to the sessions between yesterday and today, there's a few more happening for VMM. You might have seen this slide already, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. I just want to level set on as far as the capabilities in Virtual Machine Manager and its scope of management. So the investments that we've made in 2012, VMM 2012 RTM, the release product that is shipping today, focuses on four areas: on infrastructure, fabric management, clouds and delegation, and also applications via our service template model. From an infrastructure perspective, we made a lot of investments in 2012 around PowerShell commandlets, automation, ability to upgrade, having VMM be in a configuration where it's highly available. In SP1, you'll see updates around performance, scale, and primarily around VDI environments that we know are growing. So we've made a lot of investments as far as the plumbing in VMM to support those kind of environments. You'll also see updates. There's an overview session today as well on VMM that covers our tenant model, our network isolation as well. So that's all part of the plumbing or the infrastructure in VMM. Huge investments in the 2012 timeframe go around fabric management. So starting from the compute side, where you can bare metal deploy Hyper-V servers, you can then group them together into clusters, and then multiple hypervisor management between Zen Server, VMware, ESX, and Hyper-V, obviously with SP1, will support R2, Hyper-V and R2, and also Hyper-V and Windows Server 2012. We made investments in network management, so that includes the ability to create logical networks, abstract them in the environment, something that you would call production, backup, web, intranet, extranet, anything along those lines can be made into a logical network, and then you can define your templates to connect to that logical network. How it's actually configured underneath is up to the admin, and they do all the plumbing for that. But the self-service users, the users using the cloud, they never have to know about those specific vSwitches or anything that they need to connect to. You can actually model that in VMM. From a storage management perspective, we've been working with a ton of partners on being able to automate storage end-to-end within the context of a Hyper-V environment. That includes storage automation for SAN-based environments in SP1. There's a session later today on our enhancements with NAS and also local attached storage. Finally, dynamic optimization. It's a big feature that's part of this session today. Dynamic optimization is algorithms within VMM that allow you to load balance virtual machines inside of a cluster. That does include 64-node clusters. Also, it works for VMware and Zen Server. So a lot of what we will cover today from a high availability perspective will take into account dynamic optimization when we talk about preferred owners, possible owners, anti-affinity classes, for example. And the last two, so once you've laid down the fabric, you've got the cloud abstraction model. This is a new concept inside of VMM where customers can create clouds, delegate the clouds to their end users, and then end users have the ability to consume capacity on demand. You have the ability to grow and shrink that capacity on demand. They never have to know about the underlying fabric. It gives the IT administrator a way of scaling in and out their physical infrastructure independent of how their users consume the fabric. And finally, the service or the application model in VMM allows you to model a three-tier application like maybe SharePoint, Link, CRM, maybe any in-house line of business application that has a web tier line of business and database tier can be modeled within VMM. Using a service template model can be deployed, managed as an application, as a multi-tier service. So all of this does play into the HA capabilities that we're talking about today, where you can actually have the environment or VMM aware of the fact that applications are deployed in a cluster, for example, and you might not want all the web, all the database servers on the same physical Hyper-V node. So we have ways of spreading that out. Dynamic optimization takes that into account. So like I mentioned before, perf and scale. So for SP1, perf and scale has been a big theme for us. Full integration with Server 2012. It's actually, you're obviously hearing all of this, not for the first time, but there's a lot in Server 2012 that we actually had to integrate with. And so today we're talking about clustering and high availability in this part of the session, but there's investments across the board, whether it's networking, storage, large VMs. There's a lot in Server 2012. Huge investments in working with partners, whether it's UI add-ins, working on service templates, network integration, storage integration. And finally, the big one is multi-tenancy, taking the network capabilities in VMM and abstracting them to the multi-tenant clouds and having you be able to have customers with those isolated networks. All right, so setting the platform down, Windows Server 2012 gives us Hyper-V, gives us failover clustering. Those are the core components that VMM takes advantage of when deploying VMs into an environment. And from a management perspective, it's a system center as a whole, right, can manage this environment. Today, we're focusing on VMM. So for this part of the session, there are not a lot of features yet fully checked in, so I can't give you too many demos. I do have a few demos, but this will be more speaking on slides. So if you guys have any questions, anything that you want to ask, please feel free to interrupt. All right, massive clusters and CSV2. So when it comes to scaling an environment, the first time we got a feel of large scale was with 16-node clusters in Hyper-V with Windows Server 2012 R2, 1,000 VM deployments to those clusters, and there's a lot of work that went into the product to be able to scale to that environment. With Server 2012, that number increases dramatically, 64-node clusters, and up to 4,000 VMs deployed in that environment. And we're seeing a lot of interest in the larger cluster configurations, and so VMM will scale to support these type of environments. We also see a lot of interest in having mini nodes with maybe hundreds of VMs, so now the new limit on a Hyper-V standalone host is 1,024. So we're seeing interest in both sides. From a VMM perspective, we're updating all of our workflows to ensure that we give you a seamless management experience when you're scaling out your environment, whether it's 4 nodes, 16 nodes, or 64 nodes. So we will be able to provision from a bare metal provision all 64 servers, group them into a cluster, assign all of the storage that's necessary to that cluster, make sure that the networking is consistent across all the nodes. So you basically have effortless management independent of the scale of that cluster. The other part of the scale piece is to be able to manage 4,000 VMs. So even if 10% of the VMs are changing, power state changes, or any other configuration changes, that's a lot of churn that goes through. So we've done a lot of work with our eventing model so that you can see updates almost instantaneously. So Vijay Tiwari actually did an overview session yesterday on some of these enhancements, and we're down to the almost real-time updates when a power on, power off, host failure, VMs migrating to another host, all of that now is near real-time. So we're doing a lot of work to make sure that 64-node clusters, you don't actually feel the fact that it's that much of a massive cluster. It's just a resource pool of capacity. So for CSV V2, this is a new, I don't want to say rewrite, but it's a definitely a lot of enhancements when it comes to clustered shared volumes. And this was introduced in Windows Server 2008 R2. This is how live migration is able to occur with no downtime, because you basically have shared storage across multiple nodes. some of the enhancements coming in with Server 2012 is the ability to use CSVs at the file server level. So if you've been at the SMB3 talks with the file server team, you're going to see a lot of talk about scale-out clusters and cluster-in-a-box and a lot of other capabilities in the platform. CSV is a core component of that at the volume level. So when it comes to CSVs, now you can have, for example, metadata writes coming from any node in the cluster. One of the bottlenecks that we noticed in previous versions of Hyper-V or of CSV is that if you wanted to write files to a volume, you always had to go through one node called the owner node. You had to coordinate all metadata writes through that node. That did introduce a performance hit when you're deploying. Now any node can write to the volume. So those capabilities are part of the platform. From a VMM perspective, we will support CSVs as we CSV v2 as we did with CSV 1. And when we create these clusters, we'll provision CSV 2 on them as well. So you know, there's no break in the workflows that you're familiar with today. The biggest change here is our performance improvement on deployment. So now we don't have a check to look for the owner anymore. We will deploy any number of virtual machines to any one of the nodes on any one of the volumes. We don't have to actually coordinate and look for that owner node anymore. So preferred owners. Now I'm going to get into one of the components of failover clustering that we have not integrated with well in the past. In fact, if you set these things up today, preferred owners, possible owners, we actually don't necessarily respect that information. So SP1, we are introducing enhancements to make sure that we will respect that and in some cases actually set that information. So for those that are using failover clusters today, how many of you actually set preferred owners, possible owners? 1, 2, 3. Okay, so there's a few that are familiar with this. I'm just curious, actually, for those that actually have the experience with this, what kind of workloads do you do this with? Is it the tier one applications that you deploy in your Hyper-V environment? What's some of the reasons? Okay. And how large is your cluster? Are your clusters? 3 nodes. Okay. All right. So we definitely got a lot of feedback along those lines of wanting to have control, wanting to have explicit abilities to say where VMs should go, where they should not go. So we want to make sure that we respect those policies on the failover side, on the failover cluster side. So if preferred owners, this is something that's set at the resource group level. Resource group in failover terms is the VM, for example. The VM is the resource group that is going to get the preferred owner list. Preferred owners basically gives failover cluster a way of saying when a particular node fails, and if I have a resource group, a VM, on this failover node, what's the next node I should try to failover to? And then you have an ordering, and then, you know, that's what failover will do. It's not a hard policy. Basically, if there's no more in the list, but there's other nodes, it'll eventually find a node to failover to. This just gives you some ordering as to where you actually want to be able to deploy your VMs, failover to migrate the VMs. If you set it inside of failover clustering, like if you don't have VMM today, you introduce VMM, we'll refresh that information, bring it in, and then we've enhanced our placement models to understand when preferred owners are enabled. Through VMM, you'll be able to set preferred owners and give you the order on a VM instance, so it will not be available via VM templates or at VM creation time. Once you deploy it, you can set it. This is a setting that's specific to failover clusters. So if you move the VM to the library, for those that have VMM deployed, you can store a VM to the library. That setting is lost. If you migrate a VM to another host, another cluster, the setting is lost because it's cluster specific. From a placement and dynamic optimization perspective, we will give you a warning when preferred owner is set and you're trying to migrate to another host that is not in the preferred owner list. Dynamic optimization will actually look at the preferred owners, and if a particular VM happens to be on a node that is not a preferred owner, we'll actually prefer the preferred owners. We will actually move the VM to the preferred owner list. So we want to make sure, we'll ensure that through optimization, we have the VMs in the right locations based on the policies that you set. So hopefully over time, you don't have to manually configure this and then have to manually groom this environment. Over time, dynamic optimization can balance this out for you. From a maintenance mode perspective, for those that are familiar with VMM, you put a node into maintenance mode, we basically will drain the VMs out. And so that particular algorithm will not respect the preferred owner list. Okay, so that's one caveat there. And in the overcommit calculations, preferred owners will be ignored. So I don't have a code today to show, product. So this is a mock-up that we will have that actually gives you the information around preferred owners, and then you can select which ones are your preferred owners and then toggle the ordering of them. Possible owners becomes a little bit more restrictive. This is basically saying, of the nodes in the cluster, who can actually get this resource? So it's a little bit more of a hard block, especially there's a setting in failover clustering that actually enforces this. And if in the event of a failure, if you can't find a possible owner, that resource will never start up. So you have control as well as to say how aggressive this should be. But in this case, VMM will refresh this information. You can edit it through VMM. This is a setting that that is remembered only in the cluster. If it's ever moved out, it obviously, since it's cluster-based, cluster-specific, it'll go away. So in placement, so with preferred owners, you'll get a star rating, but a warning, right? That means you can continue through and, you know, no problems. You know, you take the risk because you know the warning that's there. In this case, you'll get a zero star. So if you're familiar with VMM and the placement ratings, star ratings say this is the location where we think this VM should go. If possible owners this is not a possible owner, you'll obviously get zero stars because it shouldn't go there. If dynamic optimizations happens to find a VM on a non-possible owner, it'll move it to a possible owner to ensure that you always have the best experience over time, especially in the event of a failure, right? This is what we're talking about here is availability and ensuring that you always can fail over your VMs in the event of a hardware failure or application failure. VMM maintenance mode will ignore this setting, however, and so it's not a hard block. And so but if you set it at the cluster level and enforce the hard block, then when we fail live migrate and fail over the VM, when we try to do that, it will fail if the setting is enforced. Calculating overcommit, for those that are actually using overcommit, VMM will calculate the amount of capacity that you can deploy to a cluster, workloads. You can deploy to a cluster and have 1, 2, 3 nodes of failure. In that calculation, however, when you throw in possible owners, it actually cannot calculate that. It actually makes it a lot harder. So there's something to keep in mind that as you set these policies and as you want to have more granular control of these VMs and resources, just be aware that it's going to be harder to make these calculations, do things on the fly, do things dynamically. Again, same UI we'll have for a VM setting at the VM instance level where you can set this up. Last one is VM priority. For those that are familiar with this in failover clustering, basically says what workloads should run first. If anything were to get resources on this cluster, I want high to get it first, medium next, and low afterwards. Failover clustering will preempt certain workloads that are lower priority and make sure that high priority workloads can start up. So this is a setting that we will import as well. We'll ensure that that's brought into VMM. And then you can also set it. This one's a little different, where we can actually set this at creation time and also have it set in the template. The reason for that is we want to make sure that at least the self-service users have a way of deploying a tier 1 SQL workload into the environment without having to worry about setting all these individual policies. Set it at the template, expose the template as a resource to the cloud, self-service user deploys that template, and they get these settings. Yes, sir. I think the way that this is being implemented, self-service users won't have the ability to set it. They'll be able to consume a template, with this already set by the admin. Right? And from a placement perspective, there's really nothing that VMM can do in this case. We'll actually leave it to failover clustering to do the right thing when it's failing over VMs. So from a maintenance mode perspective, we ignore high priority. We won't optimize for it. We'll actually let failover clustering do the right thing. So this is a setting, in, again, VM. In this case, it's on the VM instance. It can also be set on a template, and it's high, medium, low. That's really the three settings there. All right, so this one feature here is actually a combination of failover clustering and value add from VMM. So availability sets. This is a new concept we're introducing in SP1. This is leveraging anti-affinity classes. So anybody here actually using anti-affinity? Does anybody know what it is? One here? Okay. Anti-affinity, there's affinity anti-affinity. This is, if you want to get really granular on how you want to control every workload in the environment, this is one of them. This is basically saying that anything in a particular anti-affinity class, these VMs can never be on the same host. At some point, they might be if, you know, failover clustering can't find the right amount of resources, but it'll try to spread it out. It'll shard out the VMs and make sure that everything is spread out so you never have an instance where your HA SQL cluster happens to be on the same node. Obviously, that defeats the purpose of HA. Even if the Hyper-V host is HA, you don't want to be in that environment. So this can be applied at any tier within a service. Let me just get to the... This is a different slide deck. Sorry, apologies. I wanted to show the UI for the service template. I'll show you that in the demo. But basically, you set it at the service tier level. And once it's set at the service tier, then when you deploy this VM, again, back to the self-service model, the self-service users don't have to know which availability set to associate themselves to. They click a checkbox that says, I need this to be in an availability set. I want to make sure that it's spread out. How it's done on the cluster, on the fabric side, I'm not going to worry about that. VMM will do the right thing at deployment time, and then failover clustering will do the right thing because we will actually set the anti-affinity class. What we won't set is affinity. So we did anti-affinity, we won't do affinity. It'd be great to get your feedback for those that have looked at this or are looking at this or have deployed it, you know, once you get this in your hands. This is not an SP and CTP2, which we'll be releasing at the end of this week. It's actually part of beta, okay? So it'd be great to get your feedback on this. The value add piece of this is that we're not only leveraging failover clustering classes for this or capabilities, this is actually something metadata that can sit inside of VMM as well. Once it sits inside of VMM, it can be done for standalone hosts. It'll apply to Zen servers, VMware ESX, because VMM is the one actually deploying the VMs out into the environment. Once you have that placement engine deploying, it can take into account and say, you know what, I know that these three or four SQL instances should not be on the same node at any time. But at deployment, at least we'll guarantee at deployment time that they are spread out the right way. Let's say, for example, you have four VMs in your service tier, in your machine tier, you only have two hosts. We'll have to stack them, but at least we'll put two and two on each side. We won't have four on one and zero on the other node. Okay, so this is, again, value-add feature that we're introducing here is that we can do this across clusters, across Hyper-V standalone nodes, and across hypervisors. Okay, and it's information that will stay it's sticky with VMM, so it'll travel with the VM as it migrates throughout the environment. So you'll be able to set these up, configure them, associate them to a service template, a service deployment, and also a service instance. In the failover cluster case, we will create the anti-affinity classes in the platform side to make sure that failover cluster does the right thing as well when it's failing over VMs. At migration time, we'll remember this, and self-service users can fully take advantage of this. What I don't know is if we will be able to control them actually setting this or not. They'll have the ability, a checkbox. I don't know if self-service users will have a permission to not set it or set it. All right, so that's the one piece. So going back to the question from the previous. Okay. So the way that this is implemented, and I can actually show this in UI as well. You basically take a VM instance and you assign it one or more anti-affinity classes. One of the decisions we have to make right now as we go into the final beta is if we allow multiple or one, right? It might be optimized to one, not quite sure. Again, great to get your feedback and have some discussion around this if this is of interest. So you can set them, and then you will have your VM in those affinity classes. From a dynamic optimization and placement perspective, to ensure that you always have the highest availability of these VMs, you will get warnings when we're placing a VM that's part of an availability set if another VM already exists. You know, you'll get those warnings up front. You'll get them through the CLI as well. I'll actually show you how to do VM get VM host ratings to get those warnings, and then you can make decisions on your own if you want to have granular control or if you want to have VMM do the right thing. That's you have both sides of it. In cases where, let's say, a failure did happen, you've got multiple VMs from an availability set on a single node, DO, when you optimize the cluster, will spread it out. DO only works for clustering, so that's why I don't mention standalone hosts or anything else. In the cluster case, we'll make sure that we spread everything out again. BMM maintenance mode, we actually end up ignoring this session since it's not this setting, since it's not a hard block. Okay, so two pieces to know. So I mentioned the SSU part. The availability sets are only set on services. So in the SP1 release, if you have multiple VMs that you happen to know work together but are not modeled in a service, these cannot participate in an availability set. It's only in the service model. So for those, how many of you have actually worked with services, deployed a service, or maybe created a service template? Got a few here. So the key piece to know is that at the machine tier level, the web tier, line of business, database tier, the availability class or availability set is configured on that tier. So standalone VMs won't have this. It's only through the service template. If you want to go a step further and actually have standalone VMs, you could create a service with one tier one VM, set it to a particular availability set, and maybe have four or five VMs in the same way. You have that ability, but it won't be on the individual VM instance. Yeah, so this is the one I wanted to get to. From the self-service user perspective, they only have to know that the service tier should participate in an availability set. Under the covers, VMM will create all of this, modify everything in failover clustering, and they can be off and running. So a few more notes on capabilities that are in Windows Server 2012 and failover clustering where we do not actually have an integration point. So for those that are aware of cluster aware update, this is a capability inside of failover clustering to orchestrate the failover of workloads. This is generic, it's not specific to VMs, but it can fail over workloads. And in the event that you want to update your cluster, you know, maybe on Patch Tuesday. So VMM introduces capability in the RTM release pre-Windows 8. The recommendation right now is that you continue using VMM and its cluster patching, orchestrated patching. And since we do not actually integrate with any of the APIs in the cluster aware updates on the failover side. So we will continue to support this for pre-Windows 8 and Windows 8. That should be Windows Server 2012, sorry. We will respect if the state of the cluster is in pause. So if the cluster is in pause state, that's something that's coming from the platform, we will reflect that state. All the nodes go into needs attention. So if you do decide to integrate with this and run it in your environment on the cluster side, we will at least respect and give you the state of the current cluster. But the recommendation right now is to continue using VMM orchestrated patching as you move forward. There's also a feature in failover clustering called application health. I know it was introduced, for example, for print servers that fail. They have the ability to have a heartbeat out and say, hey, something happened, I need you to reboot me. It's application specific why they need the reboot, but it's basically indicating from the VM out to the failover cluster, I need you to restart the service or fail me over to another node. That application awareness we will not integrate with in VMM. This is actually targeted at customers who don't deploy VMM, or sorry, Operations Manager. So for any customer out there that's not deploying this, they can take advantage of the platform feature from the VMM side. From the System Center side, the recommendation is to use Operations Manager. So before we get into recovery, let me switch over to a quick demo, and then I'll leave the time with Vishal. So I'll be using Start Demo, and what I'll be setting here is preferred owners. I'll show you how to use host rating to get a warning, and then something that you can use to then make later decisions as far as how you want to be able to fail over your VMs. So in this case, I've got a VM, my VM 01. I get that VM instance. So now that I have a handle to that VM, I can see that it's part of a cluster because it's on cluster shared storage, and it's on node 1. So that's important to remember here. So it's on node 1. Now I'm going to force an update of the VM object. There are two reads. A read in PowerShell means that I'm going to go and reach out and get information from an outside system. Different from a get. Get is just give me some data from the database. This is actually reaching out to Hyper-V and failover clustering, getting all the information back. The reason I have to force it is basically I want everything. I want a full update of whatever failover clustering and Hyper-V know about. If I were to take off the force, it's going to do a very light refresher and give me information on disk changes, network changes, and a few other properties, but not what I need in this case. All right, so I got that information, and now I'm going to get the cluster that this particular VM is on, and this is the VMM cluster object. So you see that there's two nodes in this cluster. It's called CluDemo1, and it's part of all hosts. This is the host group. So now I'm going to show you the ratings right now. If I wanted to migrate this VM, you would get this also in the UI. You get the star rating for this. The way we get that is using get VM host rating. So there's four hosts in the environment. Two of them are clustered. Two of them are standalone. So right now, the only two that actually have a rating, which is 5, are the two in the cluster. Right? Because we're basically saying that you want this VM, it's HA, and if you want to migrate it, you should migrate it within the cluster. Right? So that's why you have 5 rating, but no warnings. You can migrate it anywhere you want. If you migrate it to a standalone host, we'll strip away all the HA availability, we'll put it on a standalone host, and if that host goes away, you know, there's no recovery for that, or no high availability for that VM. All right. So now I'm going to jump one level down and actually use the cluster APIs, cluster commandlets. So now I'm dropping to the failover cluster APIs, and I'm going to get the instance of that object of that cluster. I'm going to get the group that VM belongs to. So in this case, it's SCVMM MyVM01 resources. That's the group that it currently belongs to. It's set on high, so it's 3,000 on the priority. And the owner node is N1. So right now, I have no owner set. This is preferred owners. I have no owner set. That means it can go basically anywhere. Right? There's no ordering. There's nothing that failover cluster needs to do special. So what I'm going to do now is actually set an owner. So in this case, I'm grabbing the group, the VM. I'm grabbing its current owner and setting that as the only preferred owner. This particular information won't get refreshed real time, so I do have to do a force again. I get the VM object refreshed. So I'm going to run host ratings again. So the flag in here is migration, because I want to migrate the VM. I want to make sure the placement gives me the right information. So I get the four hosts again. As you can see, now they come back with warnings, basically saying that anything but N1 is fine, is not a preferred host. So therefore, you will still get 0 rating for the non-HA, and you'll still get a 5 rating for the other node in the cluster, because we won't block you from deploying. We'll just say, hey, you know what? Of these two nodes that you can go to, one of them is not a preferred owner. So again, you can use this from an automation perspective if you're building workflows in Orchestrator to make decisions on failover if you actually want to control it. If you want to enhance the environment, you can actually get all this information. Placement actually gives you a lot of information back. I filtered it out just to look at the warning list. There's an error list as well. There's SAN information. A lot of details come back with placement. So I'm going to reset this, and that's part of that. Let me switch over here. Oops. So in this environment, this is the VMM console, And here I'm in the VM and services workspace. And in this workspace, I've got four VMs that participate in one service. So one way of looking at this is to have the services view, where you can actually see all this, all these VMs deployed as a service. And then I'm just going to switch back to VMs here. Okay. So in this environment, I've got these four VMs that are part of the cluster, two on node 1 and two on node 2. Now, these are actually set with an availability set. So if you can see here, now that I've actually subscribed each one of these VMs instances in the service to an availability set, I've only got two nodes. So I mentioned before we will have to stack if we don't have enough nodes to meet the requirement. But we basically spread two and two, two on node 1 and two on node 2 for each one of those tiers. Okay, so just wanted to show you this in the UI. This is a post-CTP2 build, so you won't see this until beta. But if there's any questions, any feedback on this, or any interest on knowing more about this, I'll be here as well. But what I'm going to do now is hand it over to Vishal, and we will now cover DPM and recovery.
Okay. Thanks, Hector. So Hector talked to you about a lot of enhancement we have done in Virtual Machine Manager and Windows Server, which helps you to implement high available systems, which is great. Although the features or enhancement which you have seen does not help you for different kinds of failures, like a fat finger delete, like somebody by mistake deleted the data, or things like you upgraded your systems which corrupted your data, or sometimes things like a flood or a power failure where your whole site is down. And in this session, I'll cover a product in System Center family called Data Protection Manager, which helps you for all of these scenarios, and we'll have multiple demos, etc., to handle all of those. So can I get a show of hands? How many of you know what is Data Protection Manager is today? Okay, good number. How many of you use Data Protection Manager today? Okay, fairly good. So since I have a lot of demos in this session, I have one request that I'll take the questions all in the end, but we'll definitely have some time to take the questions. And even if we are not able to finish the questions after this session, I'll be available to take your question. But feel free to interrupt us if you like something in the demo and applaud. I'll take all those interruptions happily. Okay. So I think this is the one for... So I'm assuming a good portion of the crowd is already aware of DPM, so I'll not spend much time. DPM is our Data Protection Manager component of System Center, which helps you to take efficient backup of a lot of Microsoft product workloads like Exchange, SQL Server, SharePoint, Virtual Machine, and so on and so forth. DPM today supports data protection of at every 15 minutes. So you can go granularity of as much as 15 minutes. So you maximum data loss, you can have only 15 minutes. And that data you can back up to your disk. For example, for majority of your recoveries are for last 7 days, last 14 days, and so on. So you can keep that much of data on disk for quicker recoveries. We also support data backup on tape. So for example, for longer retention period of months or years and so on, you can put the data into the tape, send it to Iron Mountain, and so on and so forth. And finally, we have also introduced a couple of releases back a solution called DPM to DPMDR, where if you want to protect your self from a site-level disaster, what you can do is install another DPM server on a secondary site and build a replication channel between the DPM to DPM. That take care of the scenarios where your primary site is down because of power, failure, flood, hurricane, and so on. In the secondary data center, using the secondary DPM server, you can bring your systems up. So these are all the features which are already available today. Let me talk to some of the features for future. Okay, so for SP1, we are investing in three themes, and the first one is, of course, Windows Server 2012. All of you, I'm assuming, have seen the keynotes and the Jeff sessions that Windows Server 2012 is the biggest release in the terms of Hyper-V. And we are doing huge amount of investment in DPM to make sure you can leverage those benefits of Hyper-V and upgrade yourself to the Windows Server 2012. Starting from CSV 2.0, we support VMs running on CSV 2.0 and do efficient backups for that. Second, now with 2012, we can have VMs with remote SMB. DPM will seamlessly back up those VMs from a remote SMB share also. Third is VM mobility. I believe anybody who attended Jeff's session, Jeff talks about VM mobility is P0. Like anytime we talk to customer, show them a shiny feature, first thing they ask, does it support VM mobility? Yes, then I like it, otherwise I don't like it. We have invested huge amount of effort to make sure that DPM backs up your VMs irrespective of where your VM moves into the data center. Unlike some of the other backup products which assumes a static old world where you configure your backup to a machine, that machine remains there throughout its life cycle, it's no more true in the new private world, private cloud world. Things will change, they change with all these clusters and so on and so forth, and we'll give you some demo how DPM will take seamless backup for the same. Last but not the least, a lot of you have approached us during the booth and all, what about Dedupe, what you're doing about Dedupe and DPM and so on. Yes, we are going to support Windows 2012 Dedupe with DPM in the SPN release. And this is not an exhaustive list. There are many more features of Windows 2012 like REFS and so on, which we'll also support with DPM. But with the due to the time constraint, I'm focusing on some of these. Okay, so Windows Server 2012, a big release of DPM to support all those features. The next big thing theme we have is cloud. All of you have been talking about that somewhere or other you want to move to the cloud. And with SP1, we are making a huge, huge scenario where you can back up your DPM data to the cloud. Like when we talk to the customers, one thing we hear that in addition to keeping data on-prem, they always have some offsite solution. Normally, they put data into the tape and put it offsite to Iron Mountain or to some other site and so on for the different needs. Sometimes it is slightly longer retention. Sometimes just to make sure of the disaster recovery, something bad happens, they can get the tapes, recover the data and so on. But all of them, like when we talk to you, you say those solutions sucks. Managing tapes is complex. Tape is not cost effective. You have to pay to Iron Mountain. You need to send the courier, wait for the courier to receive. And tapes are not reliable. Even after all that, you're not sure that the day the disaster happens, when the courier from Iron Mountain comes, you put into the library, feels like this, and whoo, it doesn't work. None of that will happen anymore. We will have DPM backup to cloud, and I'll give you a demo that how you can get a simple, cost-effective, reliable backup, and which will give you an RTO recovery time in few minutes, as opposed to days. Today, something bad happens, you talk to Iron Mountain, wait for the UPS courier to, even if they do express, comes 24 hours late and so on and so forth. So this is a huge feature. I'll recommend all of you to try that out once our CTP or beta comes out and so on. Third theme, as Hector also talked about, that we are investing heavily in perf and scale. Windows Server itself has changed the bar for the perf and scale. Now we have 64 node cluster with 4,000 VMs. So DPM is also investing heavily to make sure you can get up to that scale and seamlessly protect your data with that scale. So for example, with 2012, we can protect up to, if I remember correctly, 4 node cluster with 400 VMs of 50 GB size. 4 node cluster, 400 VMs with 50 GB size. We have doubled, more than doubled things. Now we can do with one DPM server, 16 node cluster, 100 GB VM from 50 GB to 100 GB and 800 VMs with just one DPM server. So that's a huge investment in terms of scale. Second, this is the first time we are making our DPMs to seamlessly protect larger workload. Like in a 64 node cluster, you'll still have to put 4 or 5 DPM servers. So when you put those DPM server, when the VM moves across the cluster, we'll want to give you seamless backup experience. And for that, we are making a DPM agent can talk to multiple DPM servers so that when the VM moves across, your backup continues. Similarly, we heard from you that VMs are size is increasing. Like a couple of years back when we talked to you, you were telling that my average VM size is around 50 GB. My churn is around 10%, which is around 5 GB. Now we hear things like my average VM size is growing up to 100 GB. Churn is remains same around 10%, but now we are talking about every VM almost 10 GB of data moving every day if you are doing once a day backup. So again, we are investing heavily to improve that backup. For example, in SP1, you will have a capability to exclude pagefile.sys from your backup. When we talk to you, when we talk about 10% of churn, at least 7 to 8% of that churn is in pagefile.sys. So if we can exclude pagefile.sys from your backup, you are talking about for a 100 GB VM, everyday backup data, which was around 10 GB, becomes 2 to 3 GB. That's a huge, huge savings. So we have done huge, huge investment in each one of those. Okay? Shucks. Okay. So let's go deeper into each one of those areas. So with Windows 2012, we have CSV 2.0. Many of you are using, like when we were talking to you on the booth, that today you use 2012 or 2010, and the current experience of Hyper-V backup is not great. It's pretty slow. It has limitations of one backup at a time and so on and so forth. With CSV 2.0, we have built a filter driver for CSV 2.0. So now, unlike with the prior version of DPM, where to know what data has changed, we need to read the full VHDs. We always used to send only the changed data. That's from the very old. But to know the changed data for CSV cluster, we had to read the full VHD, find out the checksums of the blocks, what has changed, and that used to take a lot of time. With this release, we have a filter driver where we can efficiently find out what blocks have changed without reading any block of data, which gives you as much as 80% performance improvement of your backup. And I'll give you a demo for the same. Also, it gives you the capability that unlike in the past where you can do one backup at a time, you can do parallel backups. You can do up to, like, depending on hardware and software, you can do multiple level of backups here. Second, as Hyper-V allows now VMs to have remote VHD using remote SMB protocol, you can definitely leverage that feature, and DPM will continue to provide you protection on that. Again, this protection is also efficient. Here also, we are using filter drivers, so we don't need to read the full VHD to find out what has changed. It will be a very efficient backup. VM mobility. With this release, Hyper-V is talking about unlimited VM mobility. It's not about just moving the VM inside the cluster. That was there for long back, and DPM also used to work well with that. Now we are talking about VM mobility from one cluster to another cluster. We are talking about VM mobility from one cluster to a host, from one host to another host. There's so many VM mobility scenario comes up, and the good news is that DPM will support seamlessly each of this VM mobility scenario, unlike other products where if you move a VM from a cluster to a host, the backup will fail saying that I can't find the VM in the cluster anymore. Here, DPM will intelligently know where the VM has gone and continue the backup without you even worrying about where the VM has gone in the domain. Last but not the least, your favorite feature, dedupe. Windows 2012 now supports file system volume level dedupe feature. DPM will leverage that feature, which will give you a much more smaller amount of data being transferred over the wire, as well as it will save your DPM storage on the target. So some of you talked about, man, my DPM storage is filling up, what should I do, and so on. Upgrade to Windows Server 2012, save your storage, save your bandwidth, and you're good to go. Okay, without boring you any more with the slides, let me quickly go to the demos. Okay. Okay, so this is a familiar DPM server. All of you are familiar with this. Let me start with the first CSV support. So we have a protection group here where I have a VM on top of Hyper-V CSV Windows Server 2012. And let me try to create a recovery point for this. So I say create a recovery point. Okay. And let's try to monitor how's the progress is going. So, at this point, DPM tries to find out what data has changed, collect that data, send that data over the wire to the network, and so on. Earlier, if you do something like this on 2010, 2012, and so on and so forth, it will take minutes of your time, at least 7 or 8 minutes, to figure out what is changing, because DPM is going to the VHD, reading each block, taking a checksum, talking to the DPM server, what was the checksum of the block, and so on and so forth, building a list of all such DPM blocks, and then only taking those DPM blocks and sending to the server. Now, we are path of the writes on the disk, where whenever a write happens on a disk, we get a notification and we just maintain a map of the blocks in our memory. So we know which blocks have changed as soon as you write a single bit in that block. So at any point when you say, I want to create a recovery point or I want to take a backup, I don't need to do any more work. I just go to my memory that what were the blocks which have changed, select those blocks and start sending, transferring those blocks to the DPM server. And that is what gives you, like our testing in our labs show that you can get up to 80% performance improvement with this filter driver improvement. So for example, you can see the backup is completed in 57 seconds. How many of you have seen a VM backup completing in something like as fast as this? I thought you can interrupt me when you see something cool. Okay, so this is about CSV 2.0. Let me show you another demo about remote SMB. So we have, so this is, I have two hosts here, host 4 and host 5, and they are separate hosts, not a cluster. We have this VM called DPM SMB VM, and let's see the properties of this VM. You can see this VM's VHD does not sit locally on that box. It is using a share using SMB protocol, the new Windows 2012 feature. This is a huge feature, and unlike in the and it provides you a huge performance. Like it's not that it's sitting on a remote share, so it will not be performant and so on and so forth. So one, as part of this demo, I want to show you that DPM can take backup of the VMs which have VHD on a remote location. So we invested in that. As well as I want to show you that how DPM works seamlessly for mobility scenario. So currently I have this VM on this host which ends with number 4. Let me migrate this VM. So VMM has a very simple wizard by which you get this all these cool placement ratings where you want to migrate this VM. So I'll say that, hey, I want to migrate this VM to host 5. Give me OK. Let me change the resolution. Let me change the resolution if shucks. Is that there?
Just drag it.
Where is that? Auto hide. Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Okay. So now what I'm doing is I am trying to migrate this VM from host 4 to host 5, which will be a very common operation in the new private cloud world where VM can move around in your data center. Let's see how VMM moves this. So we are currently, VMM is trying to move the VM from host 4 to host 5. Normally this operation is pretty fast, so I'm hoping within a minute this will complete. Okay. So the VM disappears from host 4, and now the VM should be on host 5. Yes, it is there on host 5. Now let's see what is DPM has to say about this VM. Okay, so we have this protection group where this VM is there. It has been moved from host 4 to host 5, and let's try to create a backup request for this VM. Now, traditionally, these backup requests would have failed because it's not a within a cluster movement. Here, I'm moving a VM even from one host to another host. Same thing I can do from cluster to host and so on and so forth. Let's see what happens here. Let's see. Did I press OK? Yes, I did, but I'm not seeing the right. Oh, shucks. This is CTP2 builds. Okay. Okay. And I'm TSing into a machine in India, which is talking to another DPM server, and so there are like some performance issues. So I had to keep on clicking. Okay. So let's try to see what happened to our job. Is something coming up here or not? Let's see all jobs. So while the job is coming, let me talk to you what is expected, and if things works fine, it'll come like that. So DPM, as usual, will try to take the backup as per the host 4. And of course, the VM has moved from host 4 to host 5. So the default DPM backup job will fail, saying that I could not find the backup VM on the host 4. But at that point, DPM has the intelligence to know that I am sitting in this new private cloud world where I cannot assume static VM on the same host. So at that point, it will query the VMM server to find out what is the new location of this VM and automatically schedule a new job for that VM on that location, and that backup should succeed. So all of that will happen behind the scene for you, and you will just get backup seamlessly, whether the VM moves from one host to another host, data center, and so on and so forth. Okay, so let's see what's happening here. Okay, so this is, no, our PG is this. I think I don't want to press too many. Shucks. Okay, cool. So you see here, when we did the backup, DPM says DPM detected the virtual machine has been migrated from the host 4 and it failed this job. But at the same time, it also find out by talking to VMM that it has been migrated to host 5 and says that DPM will automatically do a job for host 5. And the next job, if you see, is nothing but a job which it kicked off on host 5 and completed successfully. So again, DPM did all the magic for you behind the scene, so you don't need to worry about any VM mobility scenario. Things will just work for you. Okay? Great. So the next one is dedupe. So let's. This is a Windows 2012 server, and I have two volumes, a volume, which is same data, and a D volume, which has exactly the same data. On one of those volumes, I have enabled dedupe, and let's see how DPM behaves when the dedupe is enabled. Okay. So wait. Okay, so this is my E volume on which I have not done dedupe, and the amount of space being taken is around 34.81 GB and 22.85 GB is used. We saw that on the same machine, D drive had identical data, and the amount of space taken there as opposed to 34, it's 11.13 GB. So it's three times the difference of the storage which you can save if you use DPM with Windows 2012 server dedupe amount. Okay? So coming back to summarize, what we have seen is four demos that DPM works with CSV 2.0 with filter driver where you can get performance improvement of 80%. Second, we saw a remote SMB file, remote SMB VM, and DPM can take backup of that. As part of the same demo, we also moved that VM with remote SMB across, and we saw DPM can successfully take the backup without you worrying about it. And finally, we saw with DPM, we can take the benefit of Windows Server dedupe and save a huge amount of space on the DPM server storage as well as on your network transmission. Okay? So going ahead, the next theme, the DPM backup to cloud. So this is the DPM we just talked about. It provides all these scenarios and so on. So as part of this scenario, the key part we are enabling, like you have targets as disk, you have targets as tape, or you have target as an offsite site with DPM, a new target is being created for you as cloud. And you have the opportunity to leverage this cloud for any of your offsite needs, where you need not depend on tapes, cost, and so on and so forth. Okay, so let's go back without any delay and see what we mean by DPM backup to Azure. Okay. Okay. Just give me a second. I just want to connect to another server in India. Any questions while it is connecting? We can take a few. Is selected from the file share. So it's even more optimized that you're not taking resources of the production. Okay? So this is our familiar DPM thing. Let's try to create a new production group. All of you create these production group day to day. We have done a very seamless integration into your current experience, so you don't need to learn a new experience for cloud. So let's select some servers. And I want to do backup of some files and folders. Let's see. So I'll say I want to backup some volumes. I want to backup something in C volume. I like this folder, Ticket Demo. Let me select this folder. So a key new feature being added here is that, like earlier, you can store data either on disk or tape. Now you can say, I want online protection for the same data. Okay? You can tell how long you want to retain the data for your disk, what is the frequency, and so on. This is existing thing, no change. Similarly, it tells you about what is the requirement on disk, etc., no change there. You can choose how you want to do the initial replication now, later, and or you want to send a DVD, blah, blah, no change there. You can do consistency check settings, no change there. Now, there are a few things we have added for DPM backup to cloud. So first key thing is that as part of this protection group, whatever data you're selecting, we let you take a subset of that data to the cloud. Of course, if you want all of that data to the cloud, it's great. You can take all of that data. But because of any reason, if you want that on my disk, I want all these data sources, but when I'm taking it to the cloud, I want a subset of these data sources to the cloud, we allow you that. And this is the screen where you can select which all of these data sources you want to take to the cloud. So you select that, and then you specify what is the retention range and frequency for backup to the cloud. Like, for example, for disk backup, you might retain data only for 5 days, while for your cloud backup, you want to retain data for a month. Similarly, disk backup, you might want to do every 15 minutes. Cloud backup you want to do once in a day, twice in a day, and so on and so forth. So here you can tell how you want the data to be taken to the cloud. Okay. And then that's it. You create your group like a standard protection group creation. One key point to note here is that when we talk to you, many of you, about how do we take this data to the cloud, a strong feedback we got that, hey, we don't want to replace our existing backup with this cloud backup. This is great for my offsite need, but I also want my existing DPM local backup. And the two key reasons we heard from you. One was that 90% of my recovery requests happen for last 5 days or 10 days, depends. That number changes different from different organization, but last few days, you can get most of your 90% of recovery happens for last 1 week, 10 days, and so on. And people prefer that data resides locally, so I can have a quick turnaround to recover that data. Second reason was that all of my production servers will not be internet facing. So I want DPM to act as a gateway. So my production server can be anywhere which may not have any internet connectivity and so on. I want to leverage my existing DPM channel, store the data locally on the DPM, and then I can sub-select what data I want to take from there to the cloud. And that's how we have implemented. It's a fully integrated experience into your DPM console where you get the data to DPM, and then you can subselect and take some data to the cloud. So my protection group is created. Okay, so this is the protection group we got. Okay, now let's create a recovery point for this. So we used to have this short-term disk protection tape and so on. Now when you create a backup, you can create a backup to online also. So I say let's create an online backup. So the online backup should start, and we should be able to monitor online backup here. Okay, let's say all jobs in progress. Okay, so you can see there an online job started happening. So while this is happening, I just want a quick show of hands. How many of you agree to this model where, or you have this need that where you want to backup data locally and you want that backup in addition to cloud backup and don't want to replace in-house backup altogether with cloud? How many of you want this model? Okay. Quite a lot of you. Anybody who want to replace the current backup totally and just go to cloud? No one. So it seems this is the model which all of you will like to go with. Perfect. Okay. So it seems our job is going on. So you can see that whenever we do a recovery point, there are two kinds of job gets created. One job which takes the data backup from your production server to DPM, which is this job and just got completed. And then there is a second job which takes the data from the DPM to the cloud, and you can see that job is currently in progress. Okay. It's going all the way to the cloud, so I think taking some time. but I hope it'll happen. Okay, while it is happening, let me see if I have enabled there on this also. Maybe not. Cool. So the backup to the cloud is also completed. Now let me show you a recovery experience. So if you want to recover your data, we had C drive, 14th is today's date. And now you can see here, where you could see earlier, you could recover from a disk, from a tape. It is telling you that 14th June's backup, you can recover from cloud. And you can do item level recovery and so on. So I can say I want this hellotechend.txt file, and I want to do recover. Okay? So I can recover standard option to original location on alternate location. Let me select alternate location. C drive, is there a temp somewhere here? Yes, we do have a temp. No change here. You can do all those settings of whether to override security policies and so on. And then that's good. You can now recover. So this recovery is happening from the cloud to your production server. And this is identical to the backup model. The first recovery job will recover it from the cloud to your DPM server. And there will be another job which will take it from the DPM server to the production cloud. So let's see whether the necessary jobs are being created. Okay. Jobs. It's taking some time to schedule those jobs. I pressed. While it is happening, let me also talk about some of the other things. We have also got you another custom filter called online, where you can see all the online jobs. We have also got, so the demo which I showed you for the protection group showed you how do you create a new protection group and enable online backup. But all of you will already have a lot of protection group today, and you want to enable online or cloud backup for them. So for that also we have got a very simple thing called, you can select any production group. Let me do this. And you have something called as add online production. So if you do that, we open up a wizard which directly take you only to the cloud specific questions. It will ask you which of those data sets you want to take to the cloud, what is your policy for the cloud, and so on. And it, using this wizard, you can quickly enable your existing production group and take them to the cloud. Okay. Did the recovery happen? Let me open ctemp also. Oh, we have got something here. Let me see why the jobs were not here. Some progress. Online jobs, protection group 2. What is the time? It's, I don't know. Maybe this is the current time. So these are the two jobs which got completed, recovery point and online recovery. And you can see the file got copied back from the cloud back to your production server. So to summarize, the DPM backup to Azure gives you a simple, cost-effective, and reliable offsite backup for whatever your offsite backup needs are. And it's a great replacement for your tape. You don't need to wait for a couple of days to get the tape. No need for tape management, tape libraries, and so on. And I'll strongly encourage you, the people who are in the TAP program, to try these beats, and the others who want to know more about it, we can discuss more after this session. Okay. Let me put it here. So I know you saw the school demos, but still no applause and so on, that why still people are not applauding. And one of the reasons is that, it's okay. Let me give you something more where you applaud yourself. So we talked to many of you and people said, wow, this is cool. I can get rid of tape. I can save cost. I can save time. It will be a great experience for customers. It will be a great experience for myself. But still, I'm not comfortable. I have some hesitation and said, what is it? So I got things like, what? Can US government send a subpoena to you and will you give my data? Like one of the banks I was talking, I don't know if you folks are here. One of you told me that, what will happen? And I said, nothing will happen. It will be exactly the same as the data is on your data premise. Then somebody asked me, what happens if your cloud gets hacked? My data will be lost? Okay. Somebody asked me that, okay, cloud doesn't get hacked. It's Microsoft cloud. It will be very protected and so on. What if the operations person working in Microsoft, we have review period going on, got a 5 bad rating and so on, and he's disgruntled and he want to take all the data, put it on eBay and so on. What will I do in those scenarios? I said, okay. And finally, somebody asked me, can Steve Ballmer access my data? He's the CEO of Microsoft. He can do anything what he wants. The data is with you. And I said, in none of these cases, anybody can access your data. Why? The simple reason is, with DPM backup to Azure, the data is always encrypted. So the data which is residing in Azure is encrypted data in our data center. So even if US government sends us a subpoena, we can say, be my guest, take all the data. They cannot make any meaning out of that data until unless they give you another subpoena and ask for the private key, which is identical to today. Even today, they can send a subpoena to you and ask for that data. Nothing changes from today. Similarly, Steve Ballmer can also not see the data until he comes to you and asks for the private key. And he can do the same even today. So in none of these cases, until unless user gets the data from us, as well as hacks your system or whatever and gets the private key from you, then only they can get the data. But anyway, if they hack your system, they have access to your data. So you are not compromising on any of your security. Friends, if you have any more doubts, I will love to spend hours with you talking about this because I know security is a big, big, big myth about cloud. And I want to learn. Maybe there are some things I am missing. And I'll love to be educated that what are other your concern which will make you applaud. Please wait, I'll address all of those. So the second thing when we say that, okay, this is great. What if I am in Europe? Europe doesn't allow me to send data out to the cloud. Still, I'm not happy. Give me that feature. Yes, we will have data centers across the globe, so you can decide that my data resides in my country, and so on and so forth. So that concern will also be handled. Now we have this conversation, still I find people are not convinced. Still something is holding them up. So then say, what is next? Say, hey, what about network? Come on, I have whole GBs of data. You're talking about cloud. How will the data go up to the cloud? And we understand that. It's not we are ignoring that. We understand that, and that's the reason we are investing heavily in things like compression. When the data goes on the wire, it will be compressed with sophisticated algorithms. We're investing in network throttling, so you can decide how much of network bandwidth you want to do. We're investing in features like pagefile.sys, where you can optimize that instead of 10 GB a day, sends only 2 GB a day of data. So even that will be taken care of. And then there was something like, hey, if the recovery needs to happen, how will I get a bigger bandwidth? That is also possible. You can talk to the ISP, like, if suppose you have the whole site goes down like this. That was not by design, it's accident. If the whole site goes down by this, you can talk to your ISP, and ISPs have offer where they can just enhance your bandwidth pipe only for a few days for you to recover the data. So folks, I hope now you can applaud if it addresses all your concerns. And if not, I encourage you to talk to us, and we'll be happy to address any of your concerns. But we still believe this is a huge, huge scenario and feature to help you have a great offsite backup solution. Thank you.